I'm pulling on my driveway. We all know what that means. It's time for their drive to work. Okay, so today I just got back from San Diego Comic-Con 2024. So I thought that I would talk all about it. Okay, so first, a little bit of history of San Diego Comic-Con. So San Diego Comic-Con has been going on, I think, since the 70s. The first time I went was in the late 80s. I believe the first summer I went, the summer in between my junior and senior year of college, I went to live in Los Angeles for the summer because I was planning to move there after I graduated. And I was originally there. I was a finalist for an internship, but then there was like a writer strike. Anyway, I was in the summer that summer, and San Diego is a couple hours south of by car. South of Los Angeles. And so the first time I'd heard of San Diego Comic-Con, I'm a longtime comic reader. I'm a huge comic fan for those that somehow don't know that. So anyway, I was very intrigued and I'd heard a lot about it. So I drove down there. So while I lived in Los Angeles, I believe most of the summers I lived in Los Angeles, I drove down to San Diego Comic-Con. In fact, it was at San Diego Comic-Con that I saw Magic for the very first time. I had heard about it. I was working in the game store at the time, and people came in and asked about it, but I hadn't seen it. Now, I wasn't able to buy it at San Diego Comic-Con, but I was able to see someone who had cards and was able to look at them for the very first time. It's the place where I got to meet some Wizards employees before I worked for Wizards. And once I became an employee for Wizards, I went down working for Wizards and worked a couple times. But then what happened was, I don't know, things got busy, I was doing other stuff, and I stopped going to Comic-Con. And then my friend Michael Ryan, the guy who co-created the Weatherlight Saga with me, he wasn't working at Wizards, he was working at another company, and he had gotten a room, and he said, hey, you can crash in my place, come on down, you should come to Comic-Con. And I hadn't been there at that point in a while, and so I did, and I had a great time. And then so I started going again to San Diego. It really reinvigorated me. And then after going a couple years, I said, hey, yeah, I went to, I think our brand manager at the time, and said, Elaine Chase, who was the brand manager, and said, would you mind if I did a panel on Magic? Is that okay? Could I do it? And she said, sure. And then they decided that they wanted to make a bigger deal of it. So our first panel was, I think, in 2009. We previewed Zendikar, original Zendikar. And we sent out a whole panel. It wasn't just me. It was me and Aaron Forsyth. And I can't remember who all the people were. I think Matt Cavada was there. I can't remember everybody. Anyway, there was a bunch of us. And for a number of years, we did sort of a really big, elaborate Magic the Gathering panel. And then at some point, I don't know, we decided that we were going to cut back a little bit on conventions and decided to not do San Diego anymore. But I went back, I don't know if it was Elaine or whoever, and said, well, look, I'm more than happy to do the panel by myself. Like, if you just send me down, I'll do the panel. You know, we don't need lots of people to do it. I can do it solo. And so starting, I don't remember exactly, like 2016 or so, I started doing the panel solo. I will get to the panel in a second, or before our podcast is over, I will talk about this year's panel. But anyway, let me talk a little bit about San Diego Comic-Con. So for those that have never been to San Diego Comic-Con, it takes place at the San Diego Convention Center, which is quite large, and it encompasses all of the convention center plus nearby hotels. I think there's stuff at, and There are things, people set up stuff all over the place. So, like, there's a lot of restaurants that get taken over. There's spaces that get taken over. There is stuff at Petco Park, which is the stadium. There's lots of stuff going on in a lot of different places. And it's quite a thing to behold. I believe there's something like 125,000 people attend. It's a giant, I mean, for those that have ever been to any convention, this is, the scope of this convention is massive. So the first night, so the convention always on Wednesday, there's a preview night. And what the preview night is, so there is a show floor of which there's people who are there. And there's a whole bunch of different things there. There are a lot of companies that have booths. Hasbro is one of them. I'll get to the Hasbro booth in a sec. But like, there's Marvel and DC and all sorts of comic companies. And then a lot of media companies. One of the big differences from when I went in the 80s back to when I returned in the 2000s was how much Hollywood, like originally it was more comic convention. And over the years, it's Comic Plus. As you will see, I still, you know, I'm a huge comic fan. So I go see panels and stuff about comics. And interestingly, those aren't the hard ones to get into. The biggest room to see stuff is called Hall H. And Hall H is where the big presentations were this year. Like, for example, the one that we're talking about is Marvel Films did a Hall H presentation. And that is where... like, they brought out, they announced that the big bad for the next adventure film was going to be Dr. Doom. And they had the actor who was playing Dr. Doom come out, dressed as Dr. Doom. And they revealed his, he took off his helmet, and it was Robert Downey Jr. And everybody started screaming, and there's clips that you can see that online. Anyway, that happens in Hall H. Anyway, on the floor, there are big companies that have booths, some Hollywood, some comics, some, and also a lot of, there are a lot of people there that are just, you know, like Nickelodeon has a booth, Doctor Who has a booth, lots of different stuff. There also are people selling things. There are a lot, I mean, you could buy comics, you can buy all sorts of collectibles. Funko has a whole giant corner, a lot of collectibles. And then there's a lot of individual stuff, people who like companies that are smaller. And there, you also can go meet individual artists, an area called Artist Alley. I've had a chance over the years to meet some artists I really admire. Anyway, it is, I don't even know how, I mean, it is like multiple football fields long. It is long. So preview night, what I always do is I start at one end, and I literally walk every aisle to see everything that is there. And preview night is 3 hours, and it takes me about 3 hours to walk the whole hall. It is huge. Okay, so let's get into the Hasbro booth. So, Hasbro normally has a presence, and they have, one of the things they do is they have unique collectibles that are just for that convention, and then you have to get a ticket, and then you have to stand in line, it's a whole thing. In the past, Magic has done some unique things for San Diego Comic-Con, meaning certain cards that only existed at Comic-Con. My favorite was one year, we did a series of Planeswalkers, but it came with a Garrick's axe, but as a Nerf axe. We had worked with Nerf. This year we started tying in Secret Lair releases. So I'll get to this in a second, but it was the first place to get the Monty Python Secret Lair cards, which I will talk about. But anyway, the booth. So the booth is a collection of all of Hasbro's properties. There's a whole bunch of different properties. And what they did is they had an artist illustrate the characters from the different properties, and it's around the booth. So in one section of the booth, you can see Marvel characters, so they have the Marvel license. You can see G.I. Joe characters. You can see Transformers. And you can see Magic characters, all done in the same style. And then there is different sections of the booth highlight different properties. One of the sections is the place where you can buy stuff, the sort of the Hasbro sales booth, whatever. But there was one section where the Magic was displayed. And so Bloomburrow was on display, as well as there's a Secret Lair that is at all the events of the year that was displayed. And then for the first time ever, the Monty Python. So the Monty Python Secret Lair, there's two Secret Lairs. And the way it works is they're all reskins, meaning the cards are existing Magic cards. They're not new mechanical cards, but they're then redone in the flavor of Monty Python and the Holy Grail. One of the famous ones is there's Prodigal Sorcerer done as Tim the Enchanter. The reason that's particularly cute is when Prodigal Sorcerer first showed up in Alpha, a lot of people referenced that he looked a little bit like Tim the Enchanter from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and that the Prodigal Sorcerer's nickname from the very beginning was Tim. and Tim came from Monty Python. So the idea that there's now a prodigal sorcerer skinned as Tim is really cool. And there's a whole bunch, there's his butt a scratch and all sorts of references. But anyway, I think that went for sale. You could buy it online the Monday after Comic-Con, which is today. But you could buy it for the first time at Comic-Con. So anyway, the other thing that the booth this year was a little bit different. The other thing we showed off at the booth is, not just do we show off the cards, but we have a bunch of partners that make cool things, like cool binders and stuff like that. So some of that was shown off. Also, there's a series of secret letters that show different planeswalkers in the form of different animals. Some of those were shown off. Anyway, there's a little section, and there are people from Wizards working that part of the booth. If you wanted to ask questions, they'd answer questions for you. All the Hasbro staff is wearing this pink shirt for the Hasbro booth. Then, for the very first time ever, we've always had sort of an indoor room where they keep product and the people could take a break if they needed to take a break. But this year, for the first time, there was an upstairs. Like, you go upstairs and there's this whole upstairs area that was off limits. It was mostly for staff. We used it, like, I did some interviews, so one of my interviews was up there. It was a place for people, if they had guests at the booth, the guests could be there. But anyway, it was sort of cool. It was the first time they'd done anything like that. Okay, so that is preview night. There's Wednesday is preview night. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So it's 4 days is Comic-Con. Normally, I go for preview night. I'm there for Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Normally, I leave on Sunday. Sunday's the slowest day. And I need to get back for work on Monday. So I leave on Sunday. Okay, so Thursday, the first thing that happened on Thursday is something that I don't normally, that they always do, but I don't normally do, is Hasbro does what they call, what do they call it? It is called the press breakfast. And the idea is at a nearby hotel or somewhere, on the top floor, they set up all the different sections of Hasbro, or not all of them, but many of them, set up a little sort of mini booth or a table, and they show off the newest things for that. So there was all sorts of stuff. There was Marvel figures. There was Star Wars stuff. There was all the different Hasbro things that had anything that was sort of made sense for the show. There were probably 10 or so different Hasbro things. These are all things that were at the booth, basically. And the idea is that there's some displays there. There's people to talk it through. And the idea is there's a breakfast there, and any press who wants to attend that qualifies can come, and they can have some breakfast, and then they can talk to us and take pictures. And it's just an opportunity for press to see all the things that Hasbro's up to. And it's like 8 to 10 on Thursday morning. So I'd never been asked before to the press breakfast, but this year they asked me. So I got up early and I went to the press breakfast. I basically was one of the people at the magic booth, and I would answer questions about magic. It turns out I answered a bunch of questions, but it was more, one of the things about press is a little more what we call mass media press, meaning sometimes the press I do are for people that are very, you know, into trading card games or into magic specifically. This was more general press, and so the people asking questions were more like, explain magic to me and, you know, give me some details. And, you know, I did a little bit more of explaining what magic was in a larger sense. So anyway, we had Bloomburrow, we had Modern Horizons 3, and then we had The Secret Lair, the Monty Python. So anyway, I explained things and talked about magic and talked about Bloomburrow and talked about the Monty Python Secret Lair. The one thing I forgot. On Wednesday on preview night, I did do one actual work thing. Was I did an interview, I think with IGN. So, and I did a video interview. Someone had swung by the booth, so they texted me. So one of my responsibilities while I am at Comic-Con is press. So if there are interviews and stuff. And so, like I said, I did an interview on Wednesday. I did the press breakfast on Thursday. I would do another interview on Friday. So one of the nice things about it is I'm in charge of doing the panel. So the panel is my responsibility. And I do a bunch of media things when they need media things. But other than those two responsibilities, I have some freedom, so I can see it, like, as you'll see. I can see a lot of the convention. It's a lot of fun. I mean, I enjoy, as a consumer, I enjoy San Diego Comic-Con. Okay, so we did the press breakfast. I got some breakfast. And then, okay, so like I said, one of the fun things is that I can actually go and experience Comic-Con. Oh, one of the things I did do was there's a play area. So the one of the hotels, the one next to the convention center, is called the Marriott Marquis. Magic Gameplay is at the Marriott Marquis. And for the first time, there was a pre-release the weekend of San Diego Comic-Con because of Bloomberg. We had pushed back Bloomberg, so Bloomberg is earlier than normal. So we had never had a pre-release before. This will become important when I get to the panel, but we had never had a pre-release at Comic-Con before. But if you went, you could do pre-release events there. And they had a whole schedule. So if you were at Comic-Con and wanted to go play some Magic, there were just infinite different sealed events you can play in, some constructed, but mostly with sealed events, just because people showing up were in order to play this event, you had to be in San Diego Comic-Con. So at least people who were at the Comic-Con thought it'd be fun to go play some Magic. Anyway, I got a chance to visit there. The other thing I got to do is I got a chance to see a bunch of really cool panels. So for those that have never been to Comic-Con, the way it works is different panels are in different rooms. Different rooms are different sizes. And the way it works is you can go to any room you want. It's once you pay to get in, once you're inside, once you have your ticket, you can see whatever panel you want to see, but you have to get in the room. And so the way it works is once you're in the room, you are allowed to stay. Once you have a seat, you don't have to leave. And so if you want to see a panel, especially one that's going to be a popular panel, you want to get there early. So for some of the really big panels, like the Hall H ones I was talking about, there are people that camp out overnight. I don't have that kind of time. Although, the one record I had is, this is many years ago, Firefly was having their 10th anniversary panel, and I was a huge Firefly fan. So I stood in line. I got up early in the morning, stood in line for 7 hours, and I didn't make it into the room. I missed by like half an hour. I've been there half an hour early. But anyway, I don't have the time for those kind of lines. But I will go wait in line. And so normally what happens is you figure out the panel you want to be at, and then you can get there a little bit early. So on Thursday, for example, I wanted to see. So the Marvel editor-in-chief is named C.B. Cebulski. And he has a talk every year talking about. He's in charge of the comics, the Marvel comics. This year, he was doing an interview with Kevin Feige, who is he's the guy in charge of the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I'd never seen him speak before, so I thought it'd be very fun to go see him speak. The panel right before him was Jim Lee. So Jim Lee is an artist that has done a lot in the comic industry, and what he tends to do in his panels is while he's doing his panel, he illustrates cards. He illustrates while he's talking. I really was there to see the C.B. Cebulski panel, but I was like, okay, if I get there early and I see Jim Lee, that'd be fun. So it turns out, and I got there before the Jim Lee panel, and I did not make it into the Jim Lee panel. I missed by a little bit. I didn't make it into the panel I wanted to do, but I was in line for a while. I was in like answering questions on my blog. But I did get in, and it was fun. Like I said, I had never seen Kevin. Trying to mention the name, Feige, I think his name. Kevin Feige is the person who's in charge of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and it's just cool. I'm a huge Marvel fan. I've seen all the Marvel movies. One of the things that's a lot of fun at stuff like Comic-Con is seeing people you've heard about, but actually seeing them in person. I had the pleasure of. There's a lot of people over the years that I've seen. Like Stan Lee, for example. I had the honor of seeing Stan Lee multiple times in panels. And anyway, it's a fun thing to see. So during the course of the weekend, just some of the panels that I was able to see real quickly before I get into my panel. I was able to see Brian O'Malley. It was the 20th anniversary of Scott Pilgrim. For those maybe, I mean, obviously, it originally was six books. And then ended up becoming a movie, and then it became an anime. Anyway, he was talking about, it was really fun, him talking about the creating of it and seeing it sort of explode. And I learned a whole bunch of stuff about Scott Pilgrim I didn't know. I read the X-Men comics. I'm a big X-Men fan, and so there was a panel talking about From the Ashes. Is they name the different segment, like there's different eras of the comic, and so they name them. So this was talking about, there's all the writers that were doing and some of the artists that were doing the new X-Men, and I'm a huge X-Men fan. And then I got to see Robert Kirkman. He is the creator of many things. The thing he's probably most famous for creating was The Walking Dead, which is a comic I read. And my favorite comic, a comic called Invincible, that is now an animated show on Amazon Prime. They've had two seasons. They just announced at the convention that the fourth season, the third season was already in production, but they've greenlit a fourth season. A really fun show, a little violent, but a very fun show if you've never seen it. Like I said, Invincible is my favorite comic. And I'm just a huge fan of Robert Kirkman. I like it that night. There's a point in time like I read every single thing he wrote. One of the things that I enjoy as a comic reader is to find writers that I really like. And I will read all the stuff by the writers I like. Brian Michael Bendis is one of my favorite writers, and so I read a lot of stuff that Brian Michael Bendis writes. Anyway, so it was fun seeing Robert Kirkman. He monitors himself, like it's a Q&A and it's just him. And he is very forthcoming and very honest about things, and he talked a lot about Invincible and some Walking Dead stuff and some other stuff. So anyway, it was very, very fun to do. Okay, let's get to my panel. So on Saturday, so every year the way it works is you have to submit a panel. But because we've done it for many years, not only do they accept it every year, but we kind of have a spot. On Saturday from 6:30 to 7:30 in room 24 ADC, we've been there for over a decade. This year, by the way, was our 15th time that Magic had a panel, although two of those were online during the COVID years. But anyway, it was our 15th panel, all of which I have been to, and the last bunch I had done solo. So the challenge of this year's panel was it was a pre-release weekend. So what happens is normally I go to our PR and media people and sort of say, okay, hey, I'm doing the San Diego Comic-Con panel. What can I talk about? And oftentimes, a couple years ago, I premiered Unfinity, and you know, there's been times when I got to show things off. Last year, for example, the week after me last year was a few weeks after me is we were talking about all the upcoming years. So I showed a lot of pictures, teasing stuff that was coming up. But this was the pre-release, and so when I talked to them, they said, "We need you to talk about Bloomburrow. It is Bloomburrow's pre-release weekend. We want all eyes on Bloomburrow. Because if I show off stuff from upcoming sets, that's what people are going to be talking about." Like, what we've learned is whatever the new hot new thing is, that's what people want to talk about. But for the pre-release weekend, we really want people talking about their pre-release experience and the pre-release. So they said, please talk about Bloomburrow. Now, the challenge of talking about Bloomburrow at pre-release weekend is we've shown off all the cards. And all the art. There's nothing to preview that you haven't seen that's in the set because we've shown it all. So I wanted to come up with something. Normally what happens is I talk for like 15, 20 minutes and then I do a Q&A. And so I wanted to do something that was new information, that something people could appreciate for being in the panel. So what I ended up doing was I did five mechanics that didn't make it into the set. And it was a little behind the scenes talking about, real quickly, I will go through the five mechanics. Some of these I've talked about in depth in other podcasts, so just as a heads up, I'm not going to go. The two that I've talked about more elsewhere, I will talk about, but I'm not going in depth as I have elsewhere. So the number one was the animal mega batch. I did a podcast on batching, where I talked a bit more about that. The idea basically was when we make a batch, normally you only get 2 to 5 items. We're sort of questioning, you have to have 2 to 5 items because you've got to list them and you got to remember them. But what if we did something so intuitive that we didn't need a list, that you would just know whether it made sense or not? The idea we were playing around with was an animal. Like, you know, is a bird an animal? Yeah. Is a rabbit an animal? Yeah. And so the idea there was, could we have a batch that's so big but so intuitive that it wasn't listed on the card? It had to be listed in the rules, but it wouldn't be listed on the card. And animals felt pretty straightforward. Like, I felt like if I went to the average person on the street, not even a Magic player, and said, is this an animal? You would say yes or no. And I thought at the time, I'm like, so it turns out it's not quite as simple as you thought. First off, we realized we didn't want humans. Then we realized that we didn't want fantasy animals because not enough people have knowledge of fantasy animals. You know, and so, and is a fantasy thing an animal or not an animal? It got fuzzy. And we realized we didn't even want fantasy animals that were part real animal, like a unicorn, just because it got fuzzy in fantasy. So we said, okay, just earth animals. We said yes to dinosaurs because they did exist, even though they're extinct now. And then there's a bunch of stuff like, is a germ an animal? We said no. Is a beast an animal? No, it's a grouping. And so in the end, we came up with it's any animal that exists or has existed as a real life animal on Earth was the thing. There's a lot of coolness to the batch. There's a lot of backward compatibility. In the end, the thing that killed it was one, it was complicated. While 95% of it was obvious, you started getting to the 5% that it was less obvious. And I think if I start asking beast and germ and serpent was another weird one where serpent in magic means a sea monster, but the word serpent means snake. So if you said it is a serpent an animal, people would say yes. So it ended up being a little bit complicated. It required upkeep. Like every time we made a creature type, we'd have to add it to the list if it belonged. And we have to be careful doing too many things that require upkeep. Not that one in a vacuum is a horrible problem, but just in general, we make a lot of them. It just becomes a lot of extra work for us. And finally, it was a really big category. Play Design said, we can't give you that much of a discount. You know, there's a lot of animals. And so in the end, it didn't work out. Mechanic number two I talked about was Fellowship. So Fellowship was the way we did our typal effects, at least at handoff, was you would have Mouse Fellowship. Mouse Fellowship says, hey, add mouse to your fellowship list. And then this card affects all creatures in your fellowship. So at first it would be just mice. But then you play your otter card and add otters to your fellowship. Now your cards that affect your fellowship affect mice and otters. It worked as a typal glue. It was created by Jeremy Geist, who works, he came in second in the third grade designer search and works in design. It did a lot of cool, fun things. It allowed you to mix and match creature types in a neat way. The problem with doing 10 creature types is the math doesn't work out really well. Anyway, I thought it was a really cool solution. It ended up, there's a lot of monitoring you had to do. It was a little bit hard to learn. And it just, in the end, the set didn't need it. We realized that we wanted Typal to be a little more like Innistrad than Lorwyn, where if you drafted all the things that belonged, if you drafted all the same animal, it would play a certain way because that animal has a play style. But the way to play is not necessarily play nothing but that creature type. But that's hard to support in limited and in constructed. Okay, the third thing was called Holidays. One of the things we were trying to do in vision design was capture the feel of the world. Not just, we did a lot of animal things directly, but there also is a gentleness that we were trying to get, like sort of a camaraderie we wanted to capture. So the idea of a holiday was it was a cycle, and each one did a basic effect. I think it was uncommon. That when you cast it, you got to go get another card that wasn't this card. So the idea was if I cast the white one, I could go get the green one, or if I cast the green one, I could go get the blue one. And because you can only play them, they were in color and there's only five of them. You didn't get that many of them, you know. In constructed, you could play as many as you had colors and stuff. In the end, it ended up being a little too, it was hard to balance. The set was already kind of crowded, and you had to kind of design the five of them as like one giant card, sort of. And it just didn't fit with other stuff going on in the set. It just wasn't the best fit. The cycle of the little paw print animals that you get the paw, like the paw energy, those cards ended up going in that slot and moved up to rare. The fourth mechanic was called Sense. So one of the things about animals is that they can sense things. They can sense weather and stuff like that. So we've been looking one of the ideas we've been talking about is trying to keyword what we internally call, what do we call it? I'm blinking my words. When you look at the top cards of your library, the idea is we do a lot less tutoring. So now instead of going in your deck and getting what you need, you look at the top number of cards in your library off of five, and you intuition is what we call it. The idea is, or not intuition, that's the wrong word. Anyway, impulse is what we call it. We've been talking about wanting to keyword impulse just because we use it a lot. So what if it represented the animal sensing things? And so the way sense worked is you named a cart, or you named something, mostly we were naming card types, and a number. So sense, land, two. And then you can look at the top five cards of your library, you can put up to two lands from them into your hand, and the rest on the bottom of the library in random order. We ended up, the set didn't really need it. The name was a little too specific. I mean, if we're going to keyword it, we want to use it in a lot of sets. And the animal flavor just wouldn't make sense in a lot of places. And just synergistically, it just wasn't what the set was doing. We just didn't need it. We had a lot going on. And it didn't tie in quite as tight. The last mechanic we tried was what we called defeatable. So one of the challenges is that we had a lot of small creatures, and we had a lot of the calamity beasts, the big nasty things they fight. Well, in the source material, sometimes little guys defeat the big guys. How do we recommend that? Because little guys are like 1/1s and 2/2s, and the big guys are 5/5s and 6/6s and 7/7s. So for a while, we thought we needed a mechanic that allowed the little guys to defeat the big guys. So we had a mechanic called defeatable. The way defeatable worked is, for example, we had like Scary Bear, four and a green for a 10/10, but it had defeatable. And what defeatable is, all damage dealt to this creature is dealt in the form of -1/-1 counters. It's sort of a cross between the Phantom mechanic from Judgment and Wither from Shadowmoor. So the idea essentially is the big creature is going to take out multiple creatures, but you could team up or have a bunch of creatures that could take out this big creature. That it became a defeatable thing. In the end, the reason we didn't do that was we just didn't need it. We didn't have that many giant, of the Calamity Beasts that we just didn't need them to have a unifying mechanic. It just wasn't necessary. But anyway, so, and then after that, I did Q&A for half an hour, and people asked about all sorts of questions. So I always refer to my panel as Blogatog Live. It's a lot like my blog where I answer questions, except on my blog, I choose what I answer, right? I get asked a lot of questions, I answer the ones I want to answer. When it's live, I don't choose what I answer, so... there were a lot of questions, and I talked about a lot of things, and I tried to be as honest as I can. I talked about how Murders of Carnival Manor didn't quite do as well, and why, and I talked about all sorts of different things. Anyway, that, my friends, is San Diego Comic-Con 2024. It was a lot of fun. I always enjoy Comic-Con. I got to do a lot of fun things at Comic-Con. I got to see a bunch of old friends. I bought some merch, so it was super fun. And anyway, I was glad, as always, to be there. I always doing the panel was one of my highlights of the event, and the panel was a lot of fun. And then after the panel, I always take pictures and sign autographs and stuff, and that was fun. But anyway, guys, I'm now at work, so I hope you enjoyed my talk of San Diego Comic-Con 2024. But as I'm here at work, we all know what that means. It means at the end of me talking about magic, and time me to start making magic. So I'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.